I'm going to continue what Mr. Davies started today with this Day of Atonement that's approaching. There's just no way that we can over-focus on these days in God's holy day plan. And I remember growing up, and maybe as part of the hippie era, which I was in the middle of, recall the question that nobody really knew the answer to. And this is all the way back in high school, and the world still doesn't know the answer. The most important question there is, what is the meaning of life? I remember thinking about that in high school, and I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It really bugs some people because they often come up with the incorrect answer. There really is no meaning. It's all an accident of evolution in a universe that itself is some kind of accident. And how many of us have friends who are atheists? And I kind of don't know how you do it, especially as we go forward and things get worse. And I just wouldn't want to live that way. Can you imagine not believing that God was out there and that there is nothing? What is the meaning of life? Yeah, that does bug some people. The true meaning of life, quite simply put, is not that hard. It's to join God as a member of His spirit family for all eternity. That's what we're here for. That's the meaning of life, to join God in His spirit family for all eternity. And that's why we cannot over-focus on God's holy day plan. It's through that plan that God reveals the true, real meaning of life. Something that you have, that your friends don't have, that most or all of your family don't have, that world leaders don't have, that the billionaires out there don't have. This plan and purpose of God is neatly outlined for us as we learn more and more about these holy days and come to understand them more and more. It's just neatly and concisely outlined for us, and His festivals are the annual high days, which we're back into now. How special does that make, as Mr. Davies was indicating, how special does that make each one of these days? Today we're 4 days from the High Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. I kind of have to come out with that at work when people say, what are you doing again? That seems to register a little bit, Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. Oh, you're Jewish, which we probably all face once in a while. But today I'd like to talk about very vital lessons the Day of Atonement has. Important messages that we must have to appreciate the depth of meaning of this approaching most solemn day in the plan of God. It's about more than going without food for a day. And it's about some very important things. As we look at atonement, as we do this, consider this one high day, we do need to keep in mind that the holy days of God deal with harvest seasons, plant crops, yes, but really humans. In the spring of the year, we have the early harvest based on Passover, days of unleavened bread, Pentecost, and hidden within these days is the message the modern church just can't grasp. And I mean modern churches, not God's church, possibly yet grasp that there are to be first fruits. And Mr. Davies touched on these. I think it was Ephesians 1:5 about the predestined. There are to be first fruits, biblically called the elect. What a foreign concept that was to us. And how does that work and why? What a mystery to modern humanity. And these elect are also called predestined, because they are a predetermined requirement of the plan of God. And they're not strong, and they're not great, and they're not wonderful. They're just common people, ordinary, everyday people like us, who for some reason God looked at Christ one day and said, that one. It's kind of scary to think about, isn't it? When this occurs, and at that moment our job became listening and desiring what God then started telling us, which is what we're getting now, which is so unique, which is so not out there in the rest of the world, saying, yes, we really want this, what God is presenting. That's what's actually happening right now. As we engage in two things, working out our own personal salvation, and this does take work, something we are to work at, and acquiring very special training for the coming fall harvest. And this is a big part of atonement, this approaching day. In the fall season, there's trumpets, atonement, tabernacles, and the last great day. Trumpets picturing the return of Christ. Atonement follows and pictures an event we just heard about in the sermonette that's really too remarkable to fully describe with words. I would like to witness that event. And actually we will. We should. It can only happen after Christ returns and takes back his rightful position as ruler of this planet. Satan will be captured. Can you kind of picture yourself hovering somewhere and watching that? As some strong angel comes down and captures him, be captured and removed, and with that this world can say goodbye to all of his evil influence for the full millennium. I kind of picture humans who survive the tribulation in the last great day into this time when Satan is captured, saying after the event, I don't know what just happened, but in big breath, I feel different. My mind is clear. I have never felt this good. I feel peace and calm when this broadcasting ends, when this Day of Atonement event happens. And that will happen on a future Day of Atonement in the great plan of God. And today I'd like to consider four vital messages of the Day of Atonement. So that's my title. Four messages central to understanding the Day of Atonement. The first of these messages is probably the most recognized, that atonement is about humility. Fasting on this day then reminds us very quickly and effectively just how mortal, how physical, how frail we are. Do we ever think about how frail we really are? This place where we are right now is exceptionally rare in this universe we live in. Oxygen is just not a common thing. Air that we can breathe is not a common thing. Get outside of the atmosphere here a little ways, and how long will we last in the vacuum of space with no air at a temperature that's almost absolute zero? Most of the universe is that way. We are very frail. We would only last seconds in an environment like that. By fasting, going without food and water, we touch on some of that frailty that we have as humans. And doing so helps us to humble ourselves before God and realize how much we need God's plan. There is nothing else. This is the only pathway. How much we need this remarkable plan. Are there humble examples out there that any of you have? Now, I'm not thinking about the church right now, but colleagues, anyone out there who is particularly humble, who we like to be around, maybe in contrast to being around the proud. Looking at all of you, I know, I fully recognize that most everyone here is a University of Georgia football fan. Well, I know Mr. Dobbins is a Clemson man, and Mr. Elliott might not put UGA first, but I like to watch that football. And last year on the team, we had he's still on the team, but we had a young man named Nick Chubb, and he's a running back, and he really started out well. He finished the year before well, taking up after one of the other guys got injured. And he started out last year really well, and his name was coming out as an early Heisman candidate. And after every game, you'd have those people on the sidelines with the mics trying to get some words from Nick Chubb. And they would ask, how did you do it? How are you gaining all these yards? How is this happening? And Nick Chubb would always kind of look down and say, oh, well, you know, this is a team sport. And my teammates open up the line for me, and anyone could run through those lines. It's really a team sport, and without them, I couldn't go anywhere. We're a team. That's humility. And when I see a young man like that talk that way, it's very inspiring. Last year, too, we had Mark Richt, University of Georgia, as the coach. And I was a little surprised the university released him, because Georgia had been winning 9 to 10 games every year since I've been here. And in the SEC, that's hard to do. But I guess they wanted SEC championships, and we weren't getting those from Mark Richt. But Mark Richt was a very religious man. Before we recently relocated, Jackie and I just moved across town to a smaller house. Our house backed up to Prince Avenue Christian School, and it was often described as the house that Richt built. A big church there, mainstream church. So Richt is a very religious man. He doesn't have God's truth, but you can see fruits of his belief in him. And I guess rumors had started last year that Richt might be let go. And one of those people with the microphones on the sidelines caught him after a game and said, what do you feel about this? Anything you can say? And he just smiled and he looked so calm. And he said, well, it's all in God's hands. It's not something I need to worry about. And that was it. I just heard earlier this week that Richt, who was scarfed up by Miami when Georgia let him go. And it's kind of ironic because Miami started this season unranked, and I believe now they're number 11. And Georgia started this season ranked, went as high as number 9, and now Georgia is unranked. So it kind of happened backwards of what maybe was being hoped for. But in Miami, where Richt is now, I heard that he just bought Bibles for his whole staff. And for every kid on the football team, all these young guys, and had their names monogrammed on the inside cover and put them in front of their lockers or on their desk. And he said, they're yours if you want them. I just wanted to be sure you had one. And he said, I'll never bother you about it. I just wanted to be sure you had one. It's so much more fun to share space and life and time with humble people like these. Life is calmer, and it's happier, and it's more peaceful. And that's part of the message of this Day of Atonement that's coming. Atonement, vital message number one, then is the examples I just described. A humble attitude makes life work better, and it is a critical part of moving toward the God family. Because God knows that is something that will be invaluable for peaceful living together that he is now designing and working toward, and all of us enjoying wonderful and rewarding eternal lives. Let's turn to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23 and verses 26 to 27. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also, the 10th day of this 7th month. So keep that in mind as we go forward today. This is the Day of Atonement. The 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement, and it shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls. And we know that means fast. And offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Afflict our souls. For humility, done by fasting, learning to humble ourselves before God, to teach us this way of life as opposed to prideful and boastful living. How important is it that we participate in this day that God has set up, that we be humble before God? How important is it? Verse 29, for any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from the people. So that's pretty clear, I think. It is very important. Why is it that important? Because if we're not of that attitude, honestly, we're just going to mess everything up in God's kingdom for everyone else and for ourselves. Why? What is humility? Definitions I found are modest, not proud, not arrogant, kind of like I saw when old Nick Chubb was talking. I thought, if he was my son, I'd be proud of that. Whoops, there is righteous proud. If humility is not being proud or arrogant, what is pride? Definitions of pride include inordinate self-esteem and conceit. One source I found said, ultimately, pride is selfish. A focus on the self to the detriment of or without concern for others. And pride hurts. Pride may be the greatest hurter of all. How can I say that? How could pride be that bad? How dangerous can pride be? Well, let's look at what pride can do even to a beautiful spirit being. And this is turning Lucifer into Satan. Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14 and verses 12 to 15. Pride may be the greatest herder of all. Isaiah 14, verse 12. God saying, how you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer. I so hate to see that this has happened. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. How did this happen? For you have said in your heart, and here are the five eyes of Lucifer, the focus, inordinate self-focus, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit in the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Can we imagine what it would be like if Satan could somehow defeat God? What do you think our lives would be like? Living under someone with this inordinate self-esteem and focus on self, and pride is selfish. Living under a spirit being with that attitude that shows lack of concern for others. An attitude like this is not one we want to be around. Attitude like this in humans of pride, simply put, is just plain hurtful to the individual who has it and also to those around him or her. That person, Satan, I will exalt myself rather than you. I will help you. How much pain has that caused in this world, Satan's ruling? How much hurt? You know, this pride, the opposite of the humility we're supposed to learn, we want to learn as we go forward in God's church and on the Day of Atonement. Simply put, God just doesn't need any more Satans. Big part of the Day of Atonement, very much about humility, which facilitates peaceful and happy living for all who are working to move into eternity and the kind of lives we want. I didn't collect news headlines from the past week. I kind of thought about it to show the hurt caused by Satan's way of pride. Because we all know the types of things occurring out there. It's just awful in different places. With all these refugees trying to find a place to live and so many things going on. And it seems to be growing. Pride is a very hurtful thing, and Satan broadcasts that. Proverbs 8. Proverbs 8 and verse 13. And God talks a lot about pride in different areas. Proverbs 8, verse 13. And we don't care for Satan's attitude. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Because evil is hurtful. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. God describes pride and arrogance as evil. And they are. Pride is no less than Satan's spirit being manifested in us, and that brings no good. Proverbs 11:2. Proverbs 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes shame. And really, that's everything Satan has done, and one day that will be manifested. That'll be made apparent to the entire world. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. Humility leads to wisdom. Psalm 10. Psalm 10 and verse 4. Psalm 10:4, the wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. What's the danger in pride? It makes people believe that they are already pretty perfect, pretty special, even to the point of not needing God, exactly as is described of Satan, and now broadcast by him to us. And he wants us to pick up as much as we can, as much as we will, and we need to avoid that. James 4, I don't think we need to go there. Verse 6, this is a very familiar one. God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Let's do go to Luke. Luke 18, and see an example of the type of attitude that God desires. Luke 18, and starting in verse 9. Luke 18:9, and this is Christ. And he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves. And this is pride rather than God, that they were righteous and they despised others who just weren't as good. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and he just talked to himself. He prayed with himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. I sure am glad how good I happen to be. I'm not an extortioner, unjust, adulterer, or even like this sorry guy over here beside me. Even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, just looking down, but beat his chest, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you this, man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. The attitude of this second man is one that God can work with toward eternity. We can see the effects of pride right up to the national level, including maybe in particular even our own nation, which collectively thinks we've got it all figured out and we really don't need God anymore. You know, how much have we pushed God out of our society? Where will such national pride lead us? And I won't go there, but Leviticus 26:19-20 says, by God, when he recognizes, and he does where we are, and I don't know what day will exactly hit this, I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your sky like iron and your earth like bronze, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield its increase. I know the Dobbins are fighting with some of that now, and maybe rain finally comes, but it's just coming too late to be good. And the trees of the land shall not yield their fruit. Why does God say this is coming? Why does God have to do this? Because of our pride as a country. Don't tell us what's right, God, or wrong. We don't need your book. In fact, we kind of disagree with it. Isn't that where we are now? So much. We don't need your Sabbath days or your plan. We've figured it out for ourselves. You know, Jackie and I sometimes watch these house hunter shows, and there are couples looking for a house, and often the couples are male-male or female-female. Of the ones that are male-female, it seems like they're half the time not even married. But so-and-so and so-and-so have been living together for 5 years, and now they're buying a house together. And you remember way back when, I think we read the Scarlet Letter in high school, how this woman had to wear a big A for caught in adultery on herself, and how people looked at it. Not anymore. I marvel with Jackie as we're watching this. Nobody even cares. Don't tell us what's right, God, or wrong is where we are. And we don't need your book. We've got it figured out. And God answers that attitude as well. And we don't need to go here again, because everyone I know is familiar. Proverbs 16:25. There is a way that seems right to you guys, to a man, but the end is the way of death, I'm afraid. And God will have to shake us out of this. And that death is not physical death that we all experience. It's eternal death. Let's go to Zephaniah. That's just four chapters back into the Old Testament before Matthew. Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Zephaniah in chapter 3 of this time, verse 11. Zephaniah 3:11. In that day, and you know we're speaking of the time of the end, you shall not be shamed for any of your deeds in which you transgress against me, because I'm going to take them away from you. They're going to be out of your midst. I will take them away from your midst. Those who rejoice in your pride, and you shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain, in my government, says God. And haughty is defined as proud, arrogant, conceited, self-important, condescending. God says, we're going to get rid of this. And you know who broadcasts that attitude. And you know how much hurt now it has caused. We're going to get rid of this. A first very vital message of the Day of Atonement is that this day, this is a day when we specifically remember the importance of being humble and the dangers of slipping into Satan's attitude of pride for all humans, an attitude that not only causes hurt but can cost us our eternity. Moving to Atonement Message 2, Christ is our atoning high priest. And we hit on this some in the sermonette with unity, the at-one-ment. Developing humility allows us to understand, but more than understand, to be willing and desire to accept the voluntary sacrifice of our personal high priest of Christ, that atoning, that unity-building sacrifice to help us move toward being at one with Christ and God and entering their family, the purpose of human life. Hebrews 8. Hebrews 8 and verses 6 through 8. About Christ, but now he, Christ, has obtained a more excellent ministry, and this is after Christ gave his sacrifice, inasmuch as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which is established on better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then no place would have been sought for a second. And some people think that it was God's covenant that was faulty, but that's not true. God is perfect. And verse 8 tells us where the fault was, because finding fault with them, with the people, that was the problem. They were unable to keep that covenant without the Spirit. He says, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Verse 10, for this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. In those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws in their mind. 10 commandments aren't going to be done away with. I will put them in their mind and write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Verse 13, in that, he says, a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete, and what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. And we have previews of all these and things the ancient nation Israel did. Chapter 9, verse 1, then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances of divine service, and the earthly sanctuary, the temple. And now we're referring to Aaron as high priest of the nation Israel, who was part of these ordinances we just read about of divine service in the earthly sanctuary, and who was a type or forerunner of Christ. Verses 2 through 7 of this chapter. For a tabernacle was prepared in the first part, in which was the lampstand, the table, and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary, that outer part. And behold, the second veil, the part of the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, or the holiest of holies, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid on all sides with gold, would have been something to see, to go in there, in which were the golden pot that had held the manna, Aaron's rod that budded before Pharaoh, and the tablets of the covenant. And above it were the cherubim of glory overshadowing the mercy seat. Of these things we cannot speak now in detail, because it was really amazing. Now when these things had been thus prepared, the priests went into the first part of the tabernacle performing the services. But into the second part the high priest went alone once a year, not without blood, and referring to another sacrifice by another higher high priest, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the people's sins committed in ignorance. Verse 7, what we just read about. One day a year, Aaron could go in to this holiest of holy place, was on the Day of Atonement. That was on the Day of Atonement, picturing the sacrifice of the coming high priest, capital high priest. Verses 11 to 12. But Christ came as high priest, and this is in contrast to Aaron, high priest of the nation Israel, of the good things to come with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. In verse 15, and for this reason he is the mediator of the new covenant by means of death. And the point is, Christ is our high priest, our atoning priest, for the redemption of the transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of eternal inheritance. So again, what was this one day each year when Aaron could enter into the Holy of Holies, not without sacrifice, to seek forgiveness for the sins of the people? Let's go to Leviticus 16 and see. Leviticus 16, the title of this chapter in my Bible is The Day of Atonement. Title of this section, Leviticus 16, The Day of Atonement. Verses 2 to 6. And the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at just any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat which is on the ark. And it's pretty serious if he doesn't listen. Don't go in there at just any time, lest he die. For I will appear in a cloud above the mercy seat. Thus Aaron shall come into the holy place with the blood of a young bull as a sin offering and of a ram as a burnt offering. And he shall put on special clothes, we see in verse 4, and clean himself. In verse 5, he shall take from the congregation of the children of Israel two kids of the goats as a sin offering and one ram as a burnt offering. Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. Verse 27, the bull for the sin offering and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was brought to make atonement in the holy place, and the rest shall then be carried outside the camp and burnt out there. And verse 29 to 31, this shall be a statute, what we just read about, what Aaron did as the high priest for Israel to get rid of their sins. This shall be a statute forever for you in the seventh month on the tenth day. You shall afflict your souls and do no work, whether a native of your own country or a stranger who dwells among you. For on that day the priest shall make atonement for you, to cleanse you, that you may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. It is a Sabbath of solemn rest for you, and you shall afflict your souls. It is a statute forever. So Aaron, the high priest of ancient Israel, representing our present spiritual high priest, Christ, not the world's, but ours. This same Christ who is doing something now in his first fruits that will one day apply to all humans when they have their chance to understand the significance of the day this happened on, the Day of Atonement. The second vital message of atonement is our high priest has provided an atoning sacrifice on our behalf so that we can all be forgiven and continue ahead toward eternal life in the God family. Definitions of atoning. If we look, what Christ has done for us is to make amends for us where we couldn't, to make restitution for us, to make up for things we've done that we can't pay for ourselves, to pay for. In the holy day harvest of humans' plan that God has, God will show the rest of mankind, and he's going to do that using us as teachers, the true identity of the atoning high priest. We now and they then must come to recognize and acknowledge who the true high priest of mankind really is. And they don't know. Jesus Christ, the Son of God. A third vital message of the Day of Atonement was touched on by Mr. Davies again, is that the day will come when Satan, the devil, will finally be revealed for who he really is. And the world will see him. And the world doesn't believe he exists now. And then he'll be in prison for 1,000 years. Let's continue in Leviticus 16. The Day of Atonement. And Aaron is again acting out what will be in the future. Leviticus 16, I'm going back to verse 7. Verses 7 through 10. He shall take 2 goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting. So Aaron brings them to the door and he shows them to God. Shows them these 2 goats. And Aaron shall cast lots for the 2 goats. One lot for the Lord and the other for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goat on which the Lord's lot fell and offer it as a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord. So again, this goat is presented before God, shown to God to make atonement on it and to let it go as the scapegoat into the wilderness. So we can notice in verse 7 that Aaron presents these 2 goats to God. Why was this done? This is because only God can tell the difference between these 2 goats. Isn't that kind of remarkable? One is Christ and one is Satan, effectively. One is true religion, one is false. Only through God can a person tell the difference. This is why we have a huge false church today that looks like a church of God to the world. And as I've said many times about my Catholic friend, he is as compelled that his church is the right one as we are that our church is the right one. I got an email from him yesterday about wonderful things popes have done over history. I could have sent a very different one back. I restrained myself. But he has no understanding, really. I remember once we were talking, I don't know just what about, and I said, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And he said, what? And I said, those are the first 4 books of the New Testament. And he said, oh, I knew that sounded familiar. Can you imagine? And that's the way the church, the Catholic Church works, maintaining such remarkable biblical ignorance. Forget about understanding the message of atonement, that there are 2 goats. And one of these goats is presently passing itself off as an angel of light. And he's kind of caught in that. But in reality, it's a dragon. Revelation 13. Let's look at that. I think I touched on this last time I talked, but talking about something quite different than the Day of Atonement. Revelation 13. In verse 11, and this is the end time, the last rearing of the head of this false religious leader. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. And we know a lamb is representative of Christ. He looked like Christ, but he spoke like a dragon. False church looks real, but it speaks from Satan. The really sad, I guess I shouldn't say sad, is this harvest pathway is ordained by God to overcome and reverse the pathway chosen by our first father and mother, Adam and Eve. The really amazing thing is all of you, as first fruits, can also see the difference between these two goats that Aaron had to present to God because he couldn't. All of you can. My friend can't. The entire rest of the world can't. Not until God opens the meaning of the Day of Atonement to all the world. And then they will see the difference. The world doesn't recognize sin. Doesn't recognize false religion at all. Can't tell one goat from the other. Back in Leviticus 16, I don't think we need to turn back there, but verse 8 talked about the scapegoat. This word scapegoat used here is better translated as the escape goat. This is the Azazel goat, which is presented alive before God to make an atonement on it and release it. That was verse 10. The first goat was offered as a sin offering in verse 9, and we know that it represents Christ. Because of the use of the word atonement with the second goat, some people think that both of these goats must represent Christ. This atonement placed on the escape goat, however, represents part of the coming very severe condemnation of Satan. And this is why this goat was presented to God as well. The coming condemnation of Satan, this is the time when God places all the blame where it belongs. All the sins on the world on the very one who was the originator of sin itself, Satan the devil. This is an atoning act, a making amends for, reparation for, restitution for the damage Satan has done, placed back on the instigator of it all, on the one who started it, onto Satan, onto this Azazel goat. You know, Jackie and I pass a sign on the way to work every morning, and it's got those three guys on it, and on each of their shirts there's one word, and the first is just, and the second shirt says be, and the third shirt says you. Just be you. And three just very fashionable looking guys wearing those t-shirts, just be you. And I comment, you know, there's a hidden message there. This message of the world. Doesn't matter if it's gay or transgendered or whatever you feel yourself to be or whatever lifestyle you choose, it's all okay. Just be you. God's rules are not even a consideration. Our entire country does not recognize right from wrong anymore, good from evil, for the ways that lead to hurt and death or the ways that lead to light, to life. Both goats look the same to our country, even though one goat is exceptionally dangerous and only wants pain and suffering and death for us, for humans. Why does Satan want that for us? Because we're potential spirit-born members of the God family, and he doesn't want that. While the other goat is love and compassion and eternal life of the greatest joy and fulfillment that can only come through the sacrifice of Christ and recognizing the need for our high priest and accepting his sacrifice. The world cannot tell the difference between the good goat and the bad goat. This will change as they too are called and come to understand the Day of Atonement in the future harvest with your help as the teachers. This is where a fourth message of the Day of Atonement becomes so very important and is probably the most hidden of all to the modern world and perhaps within the church. The message is especially for those who come to feel there is no hope. And too much of the world feels that way now. Too many people on this planet already feel that way. The fourth message is the message of the biblical jubilee, which I know we touch on once in a while, but not a lot too. And this message is that the world is headed for a time of exceptional happiness, as humans finally experience freedom from the ongoing pervasive influence of Satan and his demons. The word jubilation comes from this jubilee, and definitions of jubilation are a feeling of great happiness and triumph, exultation, joy, elevation, rejoicing, exuberance, ecstasy. The day of Jubilee is a day of atonement message. Let's go back to Leviticus, Leviticus 25. And you're probably familiar some with Jubilee and the land Sabbath. Leviticus 25 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, this is part of what I want you to do. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. Says God, 6 years you shall grow your field, or sow your field, and the 6 years you shall prune your vine and gather its fruit. But on the 7th year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for your land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. So 6 years grow crops, and on the 7th year let the land rest. And don't prune, don't do anything. Let what grows go back into and nourish the land. In that 7th year, verse 8, and you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself. 7 times 7 years. So we have these 6 years grow, 1 year don't. 6 years grow, 1 year don't. Do that 7 times. You shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself. 7 times 7 years. And the time of the 7 years, the 7 Sabbaths of years, shall be to you 49 years. So we're having a cycle here. 49 years. Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound. When does this thing sound? Of Jubilee? On the 10th day of the 7th month. This trumpet is blown on the Day of Atonement. And you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all the inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee to you. And I gave definitions of that jubilee. Exaltation, ecstasy, great happiness and triumph. It shall be a jubilee to you. Day of Atonement. And each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. The biblical jubilee is a year of restoration provided by God's law to be kept every 50 years. It was more than that. It was a day of emancipation, of freedom for people. It included the freeing of Hebrew slaves, the restoration or surrendering of a restoration of surrendered lands to their former owners. Same Leviticus 25. Verses 39 to 41, some of this. And if one of your brethren who dwells with you becomes poor, one of your brothers, so an individual is no longer able to keep providing shelter for themselves, to provide food, he can sell himself to you. You shall not treat him like a slave, not compel him to serve as a slave. As a hired servant and as a sojourner, as a visitor, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of the Jubilee. And then he shall be set free. He shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and he shall return to his own family, and he shall keep his possessions that he had, that land he had to sell or whatever to survive will revert back to him. He shall return to the possessions of his fathers. This is a time of restoring freedom and property. This word jubilee itself translates from the Hebrew yovel, Y-O-V-E-L, which means a ram's horn, a trumpet, or a cornet. When the trumpet was sounded on the 50th year, and specifically on the Day of Atonement, it was a sound that liberty, freedom, was being proclaimed throughout the land to all the inhabitants, all the property that had been taken from them, all the unpaid debts they had will go away. Everyone who has been indebted was released from that debt and able to start over again with a clean slate. It's kind of interesting that in the spring of the year, we count 7 weeks from the Sabbath that falls during the week of unleavened bread for 49 days. And on the 50th day is the Feast of Pentecost, when the first fruits, the small beginning of God's harvest, appear. In the fall with Jubilee, Israel was to count not 49 days, but 49 years. And on the 50th year, celebrate their freedom, their liberty, having the things that rightfully belong to them returned, restored to them on the Day of Atonement. This day also represents, we might not often think about it this way, but the time when not just the first fruits, but the entire world will experience freedom from Satan and his demons. That's what's being represented here in this Jubilee. We'll soon keep this day next week as part of our training now so that we can assist Jesus in the fall harvest, in bringing many sons and daughters into glory, into freedom from Satan. You will be sent later by God to work with, among others, your current friends, your current family members who don't understand their captivity that they're in now, but nonetheless some of them greatly suffer from this captivity that they are under of Satan. God's church, by a miracle, have a relationship with God that the rest of the world can't have right now. A relationship that cannot occur without the calling of God and the giving of his special holy day understanding. God will one day call all other humans to understand the great purpose of life, which is to enter the family of God. And they just don't know that. There is no purpose of life. This is the meaning of life, and it's really so very simple when you get down to it. For the approaching Day of Atonement, we've reviewed 4 very special parts of that plan. As we begin to enter this day, let's focus on developing a humble attitude that God expects, the opposite of Satan's hurtful attitude of pride, and continue to recognize that Christ is our atoning high priest, who is the door to an eternity of happiness with God. Satan, the devil, will then be revealed for who he is. That'll be quite a day for the world and for all the damage he has done, and will be in prison for 1,000 years. And the final message of the Day of Atonement is the entire world will finally experience freedom from Satan and his demons and learn the joy of God's way of life as pictured in the Great Jubilee.